Hey everyone, how's it going? This is Azrin, the Language Nerd here. I'm the owner of the Calgary Language Nerds, and welcome to today's podcast, episode, and of course, YouTube video. First and foremost, on YouTube, you may notice, I'm not sure, but the video might look a little bit blurry today, a little bit fuzzy. I broke my phone screen, when I was in Mexico, and they replaced it, put a new screen protector, and I suspect, but I'm not sure, I suspect that the screen or screen protector they put on is of lower quality, or perhaps there's something kind of fuzzy about it. So I think my picture quality might not be as clear as usual. Please let me know in the chat if you think it's not as clear as usual as well. Now today what I'd like to talk about is, first of all, something that stood out to me when I was in Mexico quite recently. I was there for 12 days. And second of all, I'd like to share an epiphany I had when watching a talk by Stephen Krashen. Stephen Krashen is a linguist who has done a lot of work in terms of how the brain acquires language. Okay, let's start with my Mexico trip. I was in Mexico for 12 days, and I was in Mérida. Mérida is mostly in Mérida. Mérida is a city in Yucatán. Yucatán is sort of on the south side of the country. And one of the most memorable language learning things that happened to me was noticing how much more fluent my Spanish was when I was in a Spanish environment, in a Spanish-speaking environment. Everything around me, written in Spanish. Everywhere around me, all I heard was Spanish. And something about that environment took my Spanish level from the extremely advanced level it's been for a number of years to an even higher level. It was a reminder that if you're not living in a country where the target language is spoken and you don't live and breathe the language 24/7, if you're not doing that and you're in a different country, you could get to this extremely advanced level, extremely high, very, very advanced level. But if you were to move to a country that speaks the target language and live there, work there, have friends there that speak the target language, everything, read books in the language, live and breathe that language, you would get to an even higher level. You know, I made a podcast and video about the CEFR. That's the framework of reference that has 6 levels of proficiency, A1, A2, B1, B2, C1, C2. And everyone thinks that C2 is the highest, but there's like 160 something page document that the CEFR has published. And it talks about the fact that the C2 is actually not really the highest level. You can go much higher than a C2. Many interpreters and translators would need to have a level that is above a C2 in order for them to do their job properly. So I think being in the country, if you actually live there, work there, interact with only or at least mostly people that are from that country, all you do is live and breathe the language, you will get to an even higher level than like a super advanced C1, C2 kind of level. So that was pretty interesting. Now, I should make something clear. Going to a country that speaks the language you're trying to learn is not some magic solution to learn the language quickly. I know people that have lived in China for 10 years and are mid-beginner, upper-beginner level at best. I actually met someone, I still know him, I haven't talked to him in a while, but there's a guy that I met that had come to Canada. He'd been here for 8 months and he didn't speak any English, like basically none. And the reason that happens, there's a number of reasons why it happens, but a couple reasons as to why going to a country is not a magic solution. It's not a magic bullet that helps you learn the language quickly and seemingly effortlessly. The reason that's not how it works, a couple of reasons, is A, some people get overwhelmed by all the native speakers around them, all the target language spoken around them. They get overwhelmed by it, and so they just disengage. They don't engage with the target language at all. In fact, they just lock themselves in their house. Number two, if you're a low beginner, everything around you is so fast, it's so advanced, they're using so many words you don't know that you can't learn anything from it. It's just too much, right? You almost would need someone that tries to slow down for you, tries to help you. But if they're not trying to do that and you're just hearing it all around you, it's just not very helpful. So for many people who are at a low beginner level, going to a country and immersing yourself may not be the best option for you. There are other circumstances too, but those are two main ones that come to mind. Of course, there's exceptions. There are people that have a low beginner level. They hop off to another country and boom, they learn it. Of course, that happens too. These aren't blanket 100% statements. Moving on, I'd like to share an epiphany I had, or a couple things I learned rather, from Dr. Stephen Krashen's talk, one of his talks on language learning. This is a talk at a conference called Langfest back in 2017. I was at that talk myself, actually. I heard it live, but I rewatched it because it popped up on my YouTube, and I was curious to see what he said because I couldn't remember what he'd said at that talk. And I had a few epiphanies that I'd like to share with you. I wrote them down in this little notebook. The first one is that what Stephen Krashen says and what my experience has shown me as well, and what when I look at other people who've learned other languages, this seems to be true, that language learning is primarily an unconscious process and not a conscious process. You know, I have a language learning newsletter on Substack that also doubles as a blog and also triples now. There's like a cool chat feature that I've recently started to use, and there's a private chat function between the Substack blog readers and myself. So it's kind of cool. I've started to use that. And there were a number of people that were telling me that they're struggling with the languages that they're learning, most notably with complex grammar rules and vocabulary. The reason that type of thing will happen is because they're many people treat learning a language as a conscious intellectual process. They think that they'll learn grammar by studying it. They think that they'll remember and memorize hundreds and thousands of words just by studying them, doing flashcards, rereading the words, rewriting them over and over. And while that might be somewhat helpful, that's not the main thing you actually have to do in order to remember all those grammar points and those vocabulary points. And in general, generally speaking, that's not how you would acquire a language. Instead, what you would need to do is you would need to seek out what I'm going to call, I kind of came up with this today when I was thinking about this podcast and I took some notes, what I'm going to call memorable input experiences. Memorable input experiences. Memorable. Well, that means something that you remember. It's interesting. It's compelling. Input. Listening and reading. That's what input means. Any kind of audio material or reading material would be considered input. The input that you are consuming has to be, roughly speaking, at your level. It has to be challenging, but not so challenging that you have no clue what they're saying. Does that make sense? And it can't be so easy that you're thinking to yourself, oh my God, this is so easy, I can just go to sleep. It has to be challenging, but you have to mostly understand what is being said, if you're listening, or what you're reading. Okay, so memorable input experiences. This is one of the key things you have to seek out as a language learner. You have to seek out memorable input experiences. And this can be done in a seemingly infinite number of ways. I'll give you a couple of options. You could travel abroad. That's an option. You could travel abroad and try to immerse yourself in the language. This is probably best if you have an intermediate level, probably. For beginners, you could do it, of course, but for many, that's not going to be ideal. And that's going to give you all sorts of memorable input experiences. You're going to hear things that just stick with you because, well, you're in the country. You have all the sights and the sounds and the smells, and you're truly fully immersed in the culture, in the country, in the language that you are trying to learn. Right? You could do it as well through music. Music can be an option, one way to do it. Right? You might have a song that truly moves you, and you hear the lyrics and the way something is phrased, it sticks with you and you remember those words. You know, it could be done through reading. Could be that you read something and it grips you. And maybe the main character has a word that he or she continues to use over and over, and that word really sticks with you. It could be done through anything. Could be done through, if you live in a city with Mundolingo events. Mundolingo has these meetups where you get to go practice languages with 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100 other language learners that speak all these different languages. It's a really fun experience, and you might talk to someone and have this great conversation, and they say something that just sticks with you, right? It was memorable. You got that input. It's a memorable input experience. Could be done through a podcast, you know, an interesting podcast that you like, and they're discussing a topic that catches your attention. You know, I was listening to a podcast, or not a podcast, a radio program, would have been about 2 years ago in Mandarin, and they were talking about fishing, and they kept saying diao yu. They kept saying over and over, and I was like, what does that word mean? And I was listening. I was understanding most of what they're saying, but I didn't catch the key word, which is the word for fishing. And I was like, what's going on? And finally, at some point, I had a suspicion. I was like, maybe it's like ooh, like fish. Maybe it's like fishing. After I parked the car, because I was driving, I looked up the word. Sure enough, it was fishing. I was like, aha! Memorable input experience. I'm never going to forget that word. You know, it works for, excuse me, it works for grammar as well. It's not just vocabulary. You know, like I've told this story before. I was using the French subjunctive. Subjunctive is a grammar point. I was using it correctly without ever having studied it because I kept hearing so many people, I kept hearing it used in so many circumstances. And I was like, huh, they're just saying that. I guess for me to say, I have to go now, I have to say, il faut que j'y aille. If I have to do my homework, il faut que je fasse mes devoirs. Like I just had all these phrases I kept hearing. So I was using them. And I would say, okay, that's how you say it. So these are all examples of memorable input experiences. So it's about, you know, if you know about Stephen Krashen's work on comprehensible input, if you know about that, this is just another way of saying the same thing ultimately, but that's the main key. That's what's going to allow you, those memorable input experiences are what are going to allow you to internalize new vocabulary, internalize grammar points, understand what people say, speak the language and interact in that language almost as if, or as if it were your mother tongue. That's what it is, right? There were a few other things that he said that really matter and tie directly into this. So the first one here is, actually took some notes, not having forced output. So output refers to speaking or writing, and forcing people to have output is bad. Now, you still need to do some output, I think. I'm trying to figure this out myself, actually, but I'm pretty sure you still would need to get some form of output, but it can't be forced. You know, sometimes you might take a class and the teacher teaches you something and then they want you to practice using it in their speech, and you get anxious, you get nervous, you don't know if it's right, you don't know if it's wrong, and increases, let's use that word. It increases what's called the, I think it's called the affective filter. I believe that's the correct term. Basically what it means is it increases the self-conscious nature, or maybe it's the monitor. I can't remember. It's okay. It's not a big deal. It increases your self-consciousness, and that makes you freeze up and has a negative effect on your fluency. Think of like when you used to do oral presentations in school. You stand up in front of the class, you get super self-conscious, and you freeze up. Nothing comes out of your mouth. Well, the same thing with language. If you're super self-conscious and you're trying to think, how do I say this sentence? Okay, wait, is that the right conjugation? Do I have to say, is it masculine or is it feminine? Oh, maybe it's feminine. Oh, because it's feminine, the verb has to go like this and the adjective needs to be like this. Oh, is it the first, is it this case? Oh, I think that's an irregular. Okay, so I got to say this, then. And Stephen Krashen has a great joke in his talk where he goes, by the time you sort it all out, the person you're talking to is gone. It's a great joke like that. I thought it's really funny. So forced output and being forced to speak is probably not a good thing in most, if not all cases. You still need to get some output, but it can't be done in a forced, it should not be done in a forced fashion. I might change my mind on that later, but that's where I stand. That seems to make sense to me as of today. The other thing that, actually, let me look at my notes here one more time. The other thing here, which I wrote down, it's not something that Stephen Krashen said in his talk, but it is something that I personally I personally believe, because it's worked for me and it seems to work for a lot of the people I've worked with and taught and language learners I've interacted with. But, you know, when you're learning a language in this acquisition style of way, you're not learning it consciously per se, but you're listening to comprehensible input. You're getting that memorable input. You're absorbing it. You're trying to allow it to seep through your body and allow your brain to almost magically sort out how the language works, right? Because you've got that magical comprehensible input. I think that is generally speaking, mostly how it works, but I want to add something here. I want to add a little something. I think a little bit of that conscious studying can act as a glue. I think it acts as a glue. That's my thinking as of today. So what does this mean? Well, I'll give an example of the French subjunctive. So I told you that I was using the French subjunctive pretty much correctly, and I was using it all the time in my speech, but I never studied it. I don't even think I really knew it existed. I just sort of used it. Then I took a French class and they taught the French subjunctive. And when the teacher taught the French subjunctive, all of a sudden, it actually made me use the subjunctive way better. Because what it did is it gave an explanation to something I was doing, but I had no idea why I was doing. Or rather, I had an idea of why I was doing it, but I couldn't articulate it into words. You know, sometimes you watch a video and someone says something that you always believed, but that person put it into words for you, and you're like, ah, I knew that, I believed that, I embodied that, I acted that way, but you gave words to something that I believe that I couldn't give words to. Well, that's what it was. It was something like that. The teacher taught it, explained the rules, walked us through it, and it was like she was putting words to something I'd always known, but had never been able to explain using words. And because the teacher now put it into words, and I could articulate that knowledge myself, it was almost like it completely solidified the subjunctive in my brain, and I never again made a mistake with it. Whereas in the past, I used it correctly 90% of the time, 95, whatever it was, but maybe I made a couple mistakes here and there. Maybe there were certain verbs I didn't know how to use in the subjunctive because I'd never encountered them. Now, one could make the argument to say that with enough comprehensible input, I would memorable input as I was using before, I would encounter those verbs I had never heard of before, and I wouldn't have needed to study it in the classroom. That's an argument to be made. And perhaps that's the right argument, but in my case, that was once I had that foundation in my head, but I couldn't quite articulate exactly how it worked. The moment someone explained it, that acted as the glue and it brought it all together. And then that's when I'd fully, truly mastered it. Does that make sense? I had that as well in Spanish as well with por and para. I basically used por and para as a nightmare for a lot of Spanish learners. There's two words for four, like F-O-R. It's a nightmare for Spanish learners. I learned it through comprehensible, memorable input experiences. That's how I learned it. There were 197 different phrases and situations and experiences I'd had where por and para were involved. And so using those experiences, I was able to, your brain kind of extrapolates out, roughly speaking, how those two work. So I was using them pretty damn well. I probably made some mistakes here and there, but I had some doubts. Sometimes I took an educated guess, but the educated guesses are frequently right. So that's a fun fact, a little tangent. I hear people say, man, I speak and I don't know if it's right. I think it's right, but I have no idea. I'm guessing. And the funny thing is often when you're guessing, you're actually right 95% of the time. Just you don't really realize it. You've had that comprehensible input. You've listened. Your brain has figured it out in this unconscious way, but you just can't articulate it, right? So it's kind of interesting. So por and para, I had it. And then someone explained the rules and I was like, clunk. Clunk, all the knowledge solidifies, and I master it. But on the other hand, you know, if something like in Mandarin with ba structures, ba is like a really weird grammar point for upper beginner, low intermediate Mandarin speakers. It's really wonky. Or, Yeah, that's probably the best example, actually. You know, I initially was exposed to that in a textbook sense, in a traditional class. I was exposed to that through the grammar rules. And for years, it didn't make sense. It didn't make sense. It made sense after I'd gotten lots of memorable input, comprehensible input. I got lots of it, and I used the BAS structures. My brain kind of figured out how it worked. I'd memorize certain phrases. I kind of learned it by phrases. I'd learn one phrase, another phrase, another phrase. I'd learn different phrases that used it, but I got those phrases from comprehensible input. I didn't make them up. I kind of hear them, be like, oh, that's what I'm going to memorize. I'm going to use that one. Once I'd heard enough and I'd consumed enough, my brain sort of figured out unconsciously how that worked. Then I went to another class and the rules were explained again. And that was like the glue. And I was like, I think I got that now. So I haven't seen Stephen Krashen talk about that. He says, he just doesn't really talk much about that from my experience of his work. So, but for me, I do think that little bit of grammar instruction, little bit of formal study, little bit, you sprinkle that in like salt on food. You don't want too much, but a little sprinkle goes a long way. I think a little sprinkle, 5%, 10% of your efforts, I think that goes a long way. Now, the final thing here, maybe two final things that I'll say on this topic are this. First of all, if you are seeking out memorable input experiences, because that's what I'm essentially saying. What I'm saying is that for many of you, the framework, the way you view the language should not be, I want to learn this grammar point, I want to learn these words, I'm going to go, no. What I'm saying is, you should only be looking for, or mostly be looking for, memorable input experiences, memorable listening and reading material, basically, right? Memorable, impactful, interesting, compelling. You should only be looking for that. That should be the main thing, right? At least for many, maybe not everyone, but many. So if you're doing that, for many of you, it's going to feel unstructured because you're going to learn a word about, I don't know, animals. And then in the same video or audio or whatever, you're going to learn the word for a lamp because they both happen to get used. And so sometimes it might feel unstructured. And I think that's okay. In fact, that's probably how it is. Probably, I don't know. I'm thinking off the top of my head now, but probably the way it is, the way it works, is something like this. Your brain intellectually wants to learn in a highly structured fashion, but the way you acquire language very likely isn't in an or very likely, I don't know, I could be wrong on this one, but quite possibly isn't in the order of a well-written or rather well-organized textbook. Maybe isn't. It actually might possibly, and I could be wrong here, learn in a slightly unstructured way, but it remembers this word from here, remembers that word from there, and it remembers that grammar point here, and it figures it all out. I could be super wrong on that, and that might be super wrong. I'm not sure, but it could very well be that. But if you are going through these memorable input experiences, you know, it's okay if it's feeling a bit more unstructured, because it probably will, because you're not looking for present tense. Okay, what does that lead into? You're not looking for a well-connected narrative of how to learn. You're just looking for things that are memorable. You're looking for input, stuff that's roughly at your level, and you're just enjoying yourself along the way. So it might feel unstructured, but that's just fine. If you want to bring that structure in, maybe if it makes you feel better, you're welcome to do a little bit of that formal study, that intellectual, conscious study of the language on the side. But remember, keep it light. Like salt on food. You don't want to take the whole salt shaker and dump it all over your pizza. That's not going to be it's not going to taste good. And the final thing, and this one I don't really know how to wrap my head around yet, but personality definitely is a factor in terms of how people are to approach learning a language. Because, listen, there are people that just have this analytical way of thinking, and they want to go through all the rules and dig down to the bottom of everything and memorize it and study it and write them. That's just something about how they are. And what I'm struggling with, and I don't know what the answer is A, will that work for them? My experience has shown me generally no, Generally, no, but I'm sure there's exceptions. But for many, doesn't work out, even though they want to do that. So this personality, so A, does that work, right? And B, it's not really a question, but it's almost like for some people, maybe they're going to have to go against what their personality wants them to do. Maybe that's the way to put it. Maybe your personality and the way you think wants you to behave in a certain way, but if you actually want to be successful at learning the language, you have to behave another way. Oh, I like that. I don't think I've ever said that before. And that might make sense. I think it really makes sense for other skills, you know, makes sense for other skills. I might naturally want to, I'm learning to swim, as you guys may or may not know. I may naturally want to kick my feet in a certain way, move my body in a certain way in the water, but maybe that just doesn't work. That's what I want to do and that's what feels right, but maybe that's not working. And if I do that, I'm going to drown. Like, I don't know. Maybe that's how it is for language too. Maybe you have certain personality traits that it doesn't serve you very well with language, although it might serve you well with other elements of life or other skills you try to learn. So yeah, let's wrap that up here. I had a lot of fun with this podcast. I hope you did too. I'd love to hear your thoughts about this. So hit me up on Substack's a good place. I mean, I don't talk a lot about my Substack. It's Azeren, azeren.substack.com. You can also just go to my website and click on the blog button. It'll take you there. So azerenthelanguagenerd.com. Go to the blog section. There's like a little button for that at the top. And so you're welcome to go check that out. A lot of interesting blog posts. I've got the chat now as well. For the chat, you'd have to download the Substack app. So it's an app you download, and there's like a little chat button. And if you're following my Substack, and then I'll be able to like chat with you. It's kind of cool. So check that out if you haven't. And yeah, let's wrap it up. See you guys later. Bye-bye.